This is an Enterprise Times podcast. I'm here with Himanshu Palsule, CTO of Epicor. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Here at Epicor Insights, we heard on stage yesterday about the progress on the realization of your product strategy. I would use an analogy of a weave that sees the disconnected vertical applications you have strengthened through the addition of horizontal product strands such as AI, RPA, IoT, analytics, and the UX through the Kinetic framework. Where are you in that creation journey, and where is the focus looking forward?
Good question, Steve. The vertical applications you mentioned are and will always be the main area of focus for us. These are industries that I believe we differentiate ourselves in, and these are industries that we excel in. What you might have seen at Insights 2019 is the amount of functionality and quality that we've added within these vertical products. At the same time, we realize that innovation is going to happen quickly in certain areas where we are best served with reuse. We started a journey with modernization of our UX a year ago, and we have made some great progress. That was an example of an initiative that goes across products by building a common framework that we call our Kinetic framework, having common guidelines, having common APIs that can be utilized. Artificial intelligence is another example, which really, if you think about it, is an extension of usability, the way we are looking at it. We don't see artificial intelligence as something that's too complicated. This is a way to solve customer problems easier and allow them to focus on what they do the best. So if you use that paradigm, if you say AI is really an extension of UX, then it behooves us to look at AI as another shared service that goes across products. So what we've done is a similar approach we took with Kinetic. We first focused on building the framework. We work very closely with the Microsoft stack in this case. We have started working with their Lewis framework, Language Understanding Intelligence Systems, and then we're using that to get the context of the intelligence that we will be surfacing across our product lines. The way it'll work is we'll have a common set of engines, common set of what we call skills and intents, and then each product will take them and specialize them for the verticals that they're in. Along with that, there are several other services. We call them connected services, some built by us, some built by our partners, that also fall in that category. We announced Epicor's Commerce Connect, which is a fantastic e-commerce platform that now gets adopted across our products. We have a common EDI stack. We have a common stack for things like payments. So we see growth coming not just in the industry verticals, but in these shared services, and most of them are now web services that go across. I think we've made great progress in this journey, which we started last year where I had our cloud strategy that we shared with the audience. And this year, what we were able to show at Insights is the progress that's happened between then and now.
If you go back to AI, to really utilize AI properly, it needs vast amounts of data. How do you get that data? Are you aggregating your customer data, or are you allowing your customers just to use their own data to improve the AI engine?
Let's look at the entire continuum of artificial intelligence. On the one hand, it's about making simple decisions guided by behavior. That doesn't need a lot of data. That can be a set of rules that have been created. It's a standard if-then-else, except it's done in a very proactive way. And you go to the other end of the continuum where you get into machine learning, and there you need a large amount of data, because unless you start perfecting that data, you're not going to see significant improvements. We are playing across this continuum, the one I mentioned earlier, where it's simple intelligence given at the point of need in real time, in context of the behavior happening, can happen with little or no data. And that's our first foray into natural language processing and cognitive sciences. Where it'll take time building is that second part of it, where the more iterations we have with data, the more skills we build into EVA, the more smarter EVA will become, and the more the predictability will continue to increase as that happens. All of this, just like UX, is going to be a journey, and I'm thrilled that we're on this journey now.
And will IoT play a part in that?
Absolutely. IoT is something that is very central to manufacturers and increasingly distributors in their supply chain. IoT has been around for a while. I mean, manufacturers tell us they've had sensors on their Panasonic equipment. We've had printers that tell us when cartridges need change. What has changed is a confluence of technology. You take sensors, you take big data, you take cloud, and you take visualization and analytics. You put them together, and now the time is ripe for innovation. So the way we do this is we have a central IoT hub that connects to all the IoT devices you have, and some of these are extremely inexpensive. They're cognitive, so they could be visual, they could be sound, they could be tactile. They send bits of data back to the hub, and then the hub coordinates with the ERP to drive actions. This has seen great adoption. In fact, the way we started with IoT, even before we announced it a year ago, with select set of customers around the world, and we went and connected their enterprise. We learned a lot. We learned how to scale. And now when we release it in 10.2.400, that releases in May, has this IoT built into our MES capabilities.
And you mentioned there about innovation. The message of the keynote was that you actually spend a lot of time listening to your customer needs and heed their voices seriously, possibly at the expense of innovation. How does Epicor actually innovate?
We've read books on this. We've read Innovator's Dilemma, is are you innovating on the speed of the customer or are you innovating on the speed of the market? And there's a variety of philosophies around how innovation happens. I think you have to do both. You cannot leave your customers behind when you innovate something new, and companies have paid the price who've tried that because the adoption rates get killed. Nor can you get so focused on customers and you solve their problems that you become their last upgrade before they leave you and go pick something else up. The way innovation happens today is in two ways. We have grassroots innovation that happens by bringing voice of the customer in. These are typically easy things that for us to fix that customers find great benefit in. We have customer advisory board, partner advisory boards. They vote on our features. They vote on the level of innovation. This discrete innovation, there are technologies that customers may not even be aware of. 2.5 years ago, I launched Epicor Labs. Epicor Labs is an initiative. It's a separate team that has the ability and the funding to go try things out. We looked at everything 2 years ago from blockchain. We looked at IoT. We looked at artificial intelligence. We looked at big data. And once an idea gets adopted by the business, then the Epicor Labs team hands that over to the business and then works on perfecting it. For example, what you saw on stage yesterday with artificial intelligence, up till 4 months ago, was a labs initiative. And when we reached a point where it could be productized, we got it in the product, and then the product team takes it and converts it into a roadmap. I believe we have to do both, and I believe customers appreciate vendors who don't sway too much in any one direction, and the key is to just be pragmatic about it. The challenges sometimes are, and I find myself doing this with my teams, is the ability to say no. It may seem like a darn good idea, but if it doesn't have good context in the market, we're not going to do it.
And is there a technology that you're hopeful for in the future that might come out of labs in the next year or two?
There's continuous innovation going on in the labs. So the way the labs work, it starts with customers. I met two customers here, one today, one yesterday, who've given us two complex problems that they're trying to solve, that they've challenged us, that there's nobody else in the industry who's been able to solve them. That would go to a labs as a project. So labs are not going to start with a technology and then find a solution. They're going to start with a problem, and both Stephen Edgington and Ayat Assam, who run the labs, are very good at this. They will take these two problems and find a solution for it. Then we'll decide, is it bespoke for that customer, or can we bring it back and solve it? To answer your question directly, we are just at the tip of the AI, ML, and IoT journey. What Kinetic is going to do across devices with responsiveness. Imagine moving a screen from a computer to a laptop to a desktop to a iPad to an iPhone and seeing the change in behavior. That's going to keep our labs busy for quite some time. Now, there are other technologies we'll look at, and we'll once in a while go to the labs and say, hey, I have access to the labs. I meet with them saying, this thing's been mulling around in my head. Can you go take a look at it? And we have to make a quick decision whether we continue or we cut.
You've already mentioned a couple of these, but you obviously announced the strategic partnership with Microsoft last year. This year you announced Evo, which had Lewis in the background, the IoT platform. What does the future hold for that relationship?
It's a great question. Last year we announced a partnership with Microsoft Azure for our public cloud platform, and we needed a central platform for scale, for elasticity, for reliability, and we've made great progress in moving customers to the Azure platform. My intent in this cloud space is to adopt a platform, but always have a separation of concerns. I believe this whole microservices architecture with loose coupling is going to be essential. All indications are Microsoft's doing extremely well with Azure, but yet there are other players. And frankly, there's a whole world of open source that no one talks about and looks at that our retail products does very well in that we also have to keep an eye on. So when we made a decision to move with AI, I agreed that let's start with Lewis. It's the most intuitive. It seems powerful. Our people understand .NET. They understand Microsoft. But I don't think we are at a point today where we're making any long-term commitments with any platform forever. If it works, there's obviously a cost aspect to it. There's a technology aspect to it. There's a security aspect to it. And frankly, there's a global aspect to it. If they can meet those, we will continue with that. And we keep looking at open source tools that will work. What we like about Microsoft's direction is they're embracing open source as well. And some of the recent announcements Microsoft has made is they understand that their world is going to be much broader than the narrower world of Microsoft technologies. That makes us feel more comfortable. Their recent announcements that they've made with everything from PostgreSQL being supported in Azure to support for the Mac OS assures us that we have the right partner in Microsoft. We are de-risking that lock-in as a result.
You obviously use AWS for the retail product at the moment. Are you strengthening that relationship, or is that just ongoing and you're still investigating it a bit?
We've had a great relationship with Amazon. The reason we have the Amazon as a provider there is that entire product came from the LAMP stack to the MEAN stack. Amazon S3 just works well. It's largely used as infrastructure. We're using, other than in the payment exchange, we're using very few platform services. So if we ever decided to decouple, it'll be relatively easy. We don't see a need to today, but we know we have that option with AWS.
Last year when we spoke, EpiCore didn't have an open platform for ISVs. You've just announced a new third-party solution in EpiCore Rentals Management. There are several application vendors in the expo here, such as SourceDay, but you still don't have a marketplace. Is your strategy evolving, and how is it evolving towards ISVs?
We do have a marketplace, and we launched it last year at Insights. And we have quite a variety of ISVs in that marketplace. You can go in and you can search by industry, you can search by product, you can search by country. What we are not going to do, we are never going to sacrifice quality of partnerships to quantity. I don't see us anytime in the near future, for example, having half a dozen time and expense management products and then leave the onus on the customer to choose. We have a very clear partner strategy, just like we have a build or buy strategy. Areas of relationships where it makes sense, like Avalara for Tax, for example, or some of the other partners that you met here, they are in our ISV marketplace. But the marketplace is fit to size. And I don't believe, as I mentioned, that quantity necessarily needs to be a barometer of success in a marketplace.
But choice could be. And there are other tax vendors such as Savos out there. There's other AP vendors out there. There's other AR vendors out there. So it does feel that you're not necessarily opening up the platform enough and attracting enough people into the marketplace. So is that going to change? How do you attract more people?
It's a good question. As we look at our strategy going forward, once we are confident that the integrations we have in the cloud with these partnerships are going to have the premium experience with our customers, we are perfectly fine adding choices as long as they're fair, they're compatible, and they solve the problem. We are not religious about it's got to be one or two, but we definitely aren't going to use the kitchen sink approach, which I've seen competitors do, where if you want to work with us, get in the marketplace, and that's how you do business with us. Because at the end, it's our brand, it's our credibility with customers, and we have to be able to stand behind it. The other thing we also have is we have a varying level of certifications based on the tier. Last year, we announced a silver tier, a gold tier, and a platinum tier, and these come with a complete partner program that was rolled out. It's been successful both domestically and globally.
Last week, the European Commission issued some ethical guidelines around AI development, and obviously Google experienced a few problems with their ethics board in the last week. What's the EpiCore approach?
Artificial intelligence is obviously at a point today where, as we look at the possibilities in the future, it raises technical issues, social issues, political issues, ethical issues, and security issues, and we completely understand that. When you look at the stack of artificial intelligence, we play in an area where we are fairly protected and isolated from the ethical issues that you mentioned. We are not forming patterns, driving behavior, making judgment, creating biases. We are not in that business. We are going to be about recommending better steps for you to complete a task within your operation. Some of the partners that we rely on, which I know Microsoft has a huge guideline on ethical standards, are the ones that we'll have to hold their feet to the fire to make sure that they create that clear delineation between technology, ethics, politics, security, etc. I think where we are in the journey today, it's going to be years before we are going to be in the forefront of having to deal with that. We understand that because we're in the compliance business. So anytime there was a major compliance change, whether it was AC 606 or GDPR, we were the first to be able to provide that compliance level. It's not something, frankly, I worry about today. 2 or 3 years from now, if you're faced with that challenge where we are guiding decisions that could be driving unintended behavior, we would be the first to stand in front of that and say we wouldn't allow it.
You do have an HCM product, though, because you didn't update this year. So is even not going into the HCM product? Because that would be the point where you might want to consider that kind of ethics guideline
exactly
things.
Right. Exactly right. We currently have no plans to get AI into HCM because it starts getting into an area that's frankly not our core. It's an adjacency, and we are not comfortable getting into artificial intelligence with human behavior at this point.
We heard Steve Murphy on stage give us three words to describe Insights. Could you give me three words to describe Epicor?
Trust, reliability, excitement.
Ranchi, thank you very much.
I think this was a great conversation. I think we had a great conference here. I think the energy was palpable. For us, it's the start of a very exciting journey. We said a few years ago that we are going to be the vendor of choice in the cloud. Our growth in the cloud has been significant, and we are certainly not just getting our share of the market, but I feel good that we're starting to steal market share in the cloud. So I think we're in a great position. Thank you very much.